This is Stateside. I'm Lester Graham, sitting in for Cynthia Canty. The University of Michigan Housing has announced it will set aside a block of gender-neutral rooms for transgender and gender nonconforming students in the fall of 2013 as a part of the gender-inclusive living experience. This idea is not without controversy. When former U of M student body president Chris Armstrong promoted the idea, he was attacked online by then-Assistant State Attorney General Andrew Chevelle. Chevelle later lost a lawsuit because of his actions, as you might recall. Our guests today are Amy Navab, who is a student at the University of Michigan and the chair of the Open Housing Initiative, and Amanda Hobson, who is the residential coordinator at Ohio University, where gender-neutral housing is already available to students. Amy Navab, let's start with you. First, explain who will be able to choose these dorms and what option this choice gives them as far as roommates.
Yes. So the Gender Inclusive Living application went live in January, and it is open to all students regardless of gender expression, but it's an intentional community for those who identify as transgender and gender nonconforming. So the reason why it's very open is that we really want to encourage allies to be able to step up and live with students in a community that's supportive.
So what's it say about society as a whole when a big university such as Michigan is deciding to do this?
I think it says that the University of Michigan wants to be supportive of all students and ensure that regardless of your gender expression, you are going to feel safe and comfortable in your living environment.
So how much might this change the way we all talk and think about gender in the future? Because this is transgender is the one part of LGBT that's not talked about a lot among the general population.
I think it opens up a conversation for students. I know working with the Open Housing Initiative over the past few years, we often were in a situation of explaining different gender identity to students, and it wasn't something that students necessarily were against, but it was something that they just didn't know about and know how to talk about. So I think this is definitely opening up the conversation.
Amanda Hobson at Ohio University, how has gender-neutral dorms affected attitudes about gender issues there?
I think one of the most key things that it has done at Ohio University is really just bring trans issues and gender identity and expression to the table. For our students, the ability to be more open and to make choices based upon compatibility and based on what may be the most safe and inclusive environment has really opened our students' experiences and made them more comfortable to then go out into the rest of the campus and do more activism and more talking about these issues. So they are on the table to talk about on the campus as a whole more.
Has there been anyone within the community or within the state who has expressed some opposition to this idea?
You know, initially when we began talking about it, we were quite concerned about pushback and resistance. We actually did not receive a lot of resistance for our project when we were in the implementation and development phase, and we've not received much since we've instituted it. So one of the things that we were very thoughtful about was how do we communicate with our constituents, whether that be our students or parents or potential students and parents of our institution, why this was important to us. So we didn't receive any pushback from the state or anything like that, though we did anticipate it.
So how important has the creation of a community like this, a place to live with others who understand gender identity questions, how important has that been for the students?
It has been incredibly important. When doing our assessment with the students in last year during the pilot program, it became very apparent that some of our students probably would have left our institution had it not been for the implementation of gender-neutral housing here. So just for a few students alone, they stayed. We retained those students, which is incredibly important in higher education. But more importantly, all of our students that found that place found a home at Ohio University that they may not have found before, regardless of their gender identity or expression.
Amy Navab, how's the application response been so far?
I think it's been overwhelmingly positive. I don't have the exact numbers of who has been applying, but we are excited to open this option up to incoming freshmen. And the majority of students who live in the dorms are freshmen and sophomores, so it'll be exciting that this will be available to the incoming students for the fall.
Besides this Andrew Chevelle incident, has there been a lot of controversy on campus at Michigan about this?
No, there really hasn't. It's been something that people in general, when we started talking about it, just didn't know this was an issue in the first place, that students might not feel comfortable in the dorms as a result of their gender. So I think the campaign for gender-inclusive housing has been a big teaching experience across the university.
And I guess what I want to ask is, was there an outcry for this? Were there a lot of transgender and other gender identity issues that will be answered by this? And were people pressuring the university to do this?
Yeah, I think there has been a lot of pressure from student voices across campus, both students who identify as transgender or gender nonconforming and ally students who feel that being comfortable in the dorms is just a right that all students should have.
I've asked this question, a similar question earlier, but I want to get a response from both of you. You know, we've seen a growing concern among the Christian right about gender rights or gay rights or lesbian, gay, transgender, and bisexual rights. I'm wondering what you think this says when we have universities in a welcoming community like this saying, yeah, we want to make sure that all our students feel comfortable at our institution. Amy, let's start with you. There's a culture war going on in the midst of all this. So how does this play in that larger culture war?
I think it's important that the university is really supportive of all different communities. And this gender-inclusive living experience isn't the only one that's being offered. There's going to be a hall in one of the dorms next year for students interested in business and entrepreneurship. And that's a different community where students want to live within a group of people who understand their interests and understand who they are. There's also talk of introducing a hall that will be for veteran students coming back. So I think this is also indicating a trend that the university wants to accommodate different communities of students who want to live together, learn together, and be with one another in the university dorms, not only based on gender.
And Amanda?
Yeah, at Ohio University, we've been very intentional about ensuring that there are specialized living communities for different populations, not just learning community-based ones that are tied to a college or academic program, but in addition, specialized living communities that help our students that might have more transition issues to college. So whether that be an international hall or our gender-neutral housing initiative. So I think that what this demonstrates maybe isn't, you know, a waging into a culture war, but perhaps an understanding that our college students and our young people have needs and desires that we may not have been meeting prior, and that it's really incredibly important in the transition phase to college that they have a space that is theirs, that is safe and inclusive, and that is comfortable based on what their needs are, so that they can, in fact, sort of build a community that is the most positive and the best college experience that they can have.
Amy DeVob is the chair of the Open Housing Initiative at the University of Michigan. Thank you very much. Amanda Hobson is the residential coordinator at Ohio University. Thanks very much for talking to us about this.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Detroit is known worldwide for cars and for Motown, the sound that affected more than one generation. One of the tragic stories of Motown, though, is the life and death of Marvin Gaye.
Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way.
Prince of Motown struggled with loss, addiction, and finally was killed by his own father in 1984.
Father, father, we don't need to escalate.
So, let's start with you, Ziola. Why did you feel there was a need to set the record straight as far as other biographies of Marvin Gaye's life?
You know, you said it right there, to set the record straight. There were things that needed to be said, and the truth needed to come out. And I felt it was time to do this. And I want people to really know Marvin and know what went on in my household. And I just felt it was time to do that with all the inaccuracies that were, you know, filmed in other documentaries and books.
Can you give me one or two examples of the inaccuracies, the misperceptions by other authors?
Well, one good one is dealing with my father, for one thing, and the reason behind what happened that day on April the 1st. You know, a lot of people speculated as to what they thought happened, and they did not know because they were not there.
Angela Barrow Dunlap, this is a revival of a 2006 stage adaptation. You've got new information. Why did you feel there was a need to revive the play in this new format? Is it just simply because of these revelations within Ziola's new memoir?
Well, quite honestly, we never wanted to stop running the first time. And after discovering information and dealing with Gene and Ziola and discovering new information, we just felt even more compelled that although we did not have Marvin's music for the play, that we still had a very important story to tell, that there was so much that, you know, just the dynamics of the family itself and that the message would help other families and just be important for Marvin's fans to know about the man behind the music, about, you know, the things that shaped him, about the family dynamics.
Ziola, you discovered your mother's journal and some writings from your father. What did those add to our knowledge about Marvin Gaye?
Yeah, I did find my sister and I found my mom's journal and my father's diary. And there were things in there, very personal, and things in it that we didn't know ourselves. So that's what has been incorporated into the new version of the play.
How are we going to view your brother Marvin differently now?
I don't know if it would change the way you view him or not, because most people just love Marvin because he was Marvin Gaye and he has such a message to send to the people. I just want people to come away with closure more so than anything else, and to knowing that when you understand something, you can heal more. You know, I want to heal people or help somebody out there by seeing my story. You know, because my family was dysfunctional, but so a lot of other families out there. And if they can see something in my story about my brother and my family that could help them, I feel that I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah, dysfunctional can mean a lot of things. What was it like growing up in that family?
Oh, you need to come and see the play. Let me say it was very interesting. You know, my family was a very interesting family. And, of course, you know, there was addiction running through the family, and that's the main thing I like to bring up, that if somebody else is addicted or you see some addiction in somebody that you love, that you, you know, take them and get them some help. We weren't able to do that with Marvin. My father was ill. He was an alcoholic. Marvin did drugs, and I did drugs. So, you know, it was that whole dynamic of just, you know, getting help for somebody else. And if I can help one person out there, then you know, I feel like I've done what I'm supposed to do.
This is Stateside. We are speaking with Ziola Gaye, the author of My Brother Marvin and sister of the late Marvin Gaye, and Angela Barrow Dunlap, the playwright who directs My Brother Marvin, which is appearing at Fisher Theater in Detroit. Angela, I wanted to ask you, how will the play change the legacy of Marvin Gaye?
I think that it will help his fans to understand him more. I think that people feel so connected to Marvin. And, you know, we know his music. We can, you know, buy the records. We know his music. But we don't know the truth about life with Marvin. And no one can tell that better than Ziola Gaye, who was there in the home. There are only two individuals still living who grew up in the home with Marvin and understood those dynamics, even the backstory of his mother and his father. We're dealing here with generational curses, and we're sharing some of that now in this new version of the play, the things that shaped his mother and made her the woman that she was, and the things that his father had to go through in his own childhood that helped to, you know, make him the man that he became and you know, explains the problems that he had with his son.
Ziola, the last couple of days I've been asking different people, what do you know about Marvin Gaye? And they can name off three or four songs. Maybe they're bigger fans and know more about him. But they basically, people who aren't real big followers of Marvin Gaye know a little bit of his music, and they know that he died at the hands of your father. How difficult was it to write this firsthand assessment of this horrible event for your memoir? And what's it like seeing it on stage or being reminded of it on stage on a regular basis?
Well, it was very difficult to write because I was addicted to drugs. It took a lot of years for me to be able to even put it down. I had to go to rehab, get clean, clear my mind out and clear my heart out, and then I was able to write it. And as I was writing, of course I feel it. I feel everything. You know, it's, to me, it was just like yesterday. And to answer your question, sometimes it's therapeutic for me to sit there and watch it. And then sometimes it's always extremely hard to see, but sometimes I can go away and feel a little more healing. And that's what I need to do. I get closure. It makes me feel like I'm handling it more. I know it's been 28, 29 years, but it was something that was so impacted on my life. You know, I to answer your question, I don't know how I'm going to feel.
I have to say, the fans of Marvin Gaye must really appreciate your candidness, your honesty about what was going on in the family. Angela, I wanted to ask you, how do you capture this kind of emotion, this kind of sadness, and translate it into a format that's fit for the stage?
Well, we are so blessed to have cast Lynn Whitfield and Clifton Powell. Lynn Whitfield just brings to the character of Viola's mother such depth. It's just really, in my opinion, certainly we had it on the page, but Lynn Whitfield and Clifton Powell, they make it come to life on stage. It's magical.
Right.
Well, we've been talking about the stage adaptation of My Brother Marvin from a memoir written by Ziola Gaye, who is Marvin's little sister, and the playwright and director of that performance, Angela Barrow Dunlap. Thanks very much for talking with us today.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure.
Absolutely.
Here at Stateside, we want to connect with you. Find us online at michiganradio.org. On Facebook, just search for Stateside with Cynthia Canty. And on Twitter, at Stateside Radio. Offer up comments, suggest a story. Maybe you know someone who should be profiled. Coming up next, love is in the air. We'll bring you stories for Valentine's Day and the history of the holiday here in Michigan. This is Stateside. Hey, welcome back to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. Now, we bring you stories for Valentine's Day from Michigan storyteller Allison Downey.
What's Valentine's Day?
It means you can give hugs or kisses. Where you get great big hugs.
It means I love you and Checker.